My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. New episode. Back again with one of those evergreen questions. My guests this week are Andrew Elmore, who is returning back to the show, and a new guest, my friend Sean, who will be on the show for the first time on the back half of the episode. I ask both of them, what is one of the games you consider to be the greatest of all time? I love coming back to this one, and I will continue to come back to this one just to hear different thoughts, different opinions, different perspectives. It's always fun to see how people bring up different eras and different generations, how close they are, how far apart they are, and just some of the ideas of those games that we consider to be the greatest. So I hope you enjoy listening to the episode. I do have my 32-bit library books still working and still plugging away. Volume 1 through 3 are available now through retrogamebooks.com. You can also get them on Amazon if you're an international buyer. They're on like Amazon.eu and .jp and whatever the different international versions are, but they can get deliver directly to you via there. I also have volume 4 that will be out shortly, that is finished up, and it's just in the printing process for that. But otherwise, I don't really have much. If you have thoughts or comments, again, reach out on social media at Darren Hupke on nearly all the current social media platforms, or at 32-bit library on Twitter, still over there helping to promote the book series. Otherwise, enjoy, and I will be back with another new episode next week. Welcome back, Andrew. You are on another episode of the show, and we are going to have a conversation about a question, and that is how this
we're gonna have a little performance review. We need to talk.
Yeah, so a lot of messages on that Half-Life 2 take apparently have been flooding my inbox, and we only recorded that 6 minutes ago, so
it hasn't even been live yet. People just know.
So welcome back to another episode. Before we jump in to get you warmed up for the main episode, what is your favorite animal companion in a video game?
Ooh, that is a good one. There's a lot of answers for that one. What is my favorite animal companion in a video game? Rush is up there, Mega Man, for sure. He's a good little buddy. I want to say Trico really badly, but I have not finished that game because the frame rate was giving me some motion sickness issues at the time. What are some good little guys? I don't know. Whatever. Rush. Let's just say Rush. That's
Rush?
Fine.
Okay. little Palico. You can get one of those Palicos from Monster Hunter, maybe, you know? But I think Rush is a better choice. Is Rush a dog, like part dog, part robot? Is Mega Man a part human, part robot?
I don't think so.
So they just gave him like a humanoid face?
I think he's Astro Boy.
Okay. I always thought because, yeah, I mean, I knew that all the robot masters were fully like robotic creations, but like some of like the animations, it looks like it shows Mega Man with like, you know, hair and like a full body, and then like the armor goes on over him and stuff too. And so what the hell did Dr. Light do to that child? Or if he's a robot, that's fine. That's fine.
Is it?
But it's, you know, I don't want to get into the politics of Mega Man's world.
Rights.
Yeah, exactly. That's for them to decide. Like, I'll let the people decide. Democracy in his environment in 20XX. They can figure that out.
Yeah, I wonder if that Saturday morning cartoon I was watching in the early 90s had a... Is that canon? Does that count?
I think so.
Super fighting robot.
Mega Man.
Yeah, dude, man. I
I've wanted to find that again. I'm the internet. I could just Google it. I know, and it's going to probably be totally easily available to me. But it's one of those
Did
ones.
Did he sound hilariously weird in that, or was that just Captain N or whatever?
No, he didn't sound weird in that cartoon. Just in Captain N. Yeah, that version of Mega Man was weird too. Was like... Oh boy, what were they thinking there? I mean, I guess that was just the only thing you had to go on was the 8-bit version of a non-speaking character of like. You didn't really know much. And then you start to confuse some of like the box art stuff and localization True. Stuff. So it didn't make it easy to get an accurate portrayal of who Mega Man really was.
Yeah, we didn't have the, exceeding the high production values of the U.S. version of Mega Man 8 cutscenes to go on yet.
I like those. I'm a defender of those. I'm even okay with the voice acting.
Yeah, I just think it's like, I don't know, it sounds like it was recorded weird. Like, I feel like you can hear, like, shuffling papers in the background. Yeah. Like, they don't know if they're recording a take or not kind of thing. But yeah. Like, yeah. Whatever.
That's definitely, it definitely feels like it's part of the case. But I do like that they were there. I'm literally scrolling through a list of Dreamcast games here trying to throw back to one of the first episode we were recording on to find that stupid game. And I can't multitask. I'm going to give up on it. I'm going to just do that offline. Ah. God,
is it Romania? Like, I don't.
No, it. I swear, no. It was an acronym, and it was like ICE or MACE or. But that's you know, weird. No, it's not that.
Because when you first said acronym, I thought you meant lack of love. That kind of like love to lick. Ryuichi Sakamoto game.
Yeah, but no. This came out in America. Like this.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, okay. I'm in the S's. I might as well just finish this off. We're going to be...
This is the show now. We're
gonna...
Reading a Wikipedia list of Dreamcast games.
Machin X. There it is. No, that's not it.
Oh, Machin X rules. That's a video game right there.
Yeah. You know what? Remember a game that I was... This is a whole episode, too. I have a whole prompt that I do of games, like average games that you love. That's not the question we're answering today.
The problem is that's every game that I love, which is why I skipped that one. I was like, everything that I love lives within the like 4 to 6 range on IGN and GameSpot.
But see, that's fine. That's fine. But Evil Zone on the PS1 was this like bizarre like fighting game. And I think there was even like one hit kills and like every character like controlled differently. Like it was really rad. It was not that great of a game. But I just enjoyed the production value that it had and kind of the interesting design from all like the characters. They were all just like cool random anime tropes just kind of all thrown into one game and one bucket and everything.
Nice.
But as a kid, I definitely enjoyed that. Rather than, you know, downloading images of Dragon Ball Z and printing them off of my grandma's computer just to have like a bunch of physically offline versions of like a pre-Wikipedia entry of every character. That was my only other exposure to like anime stuff as a child, and I just loved that game for that reason.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say take two of the printouts of like Goku and Vegeta or whatever and just like make the pieces of paper fight each other.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I kind of did that. I would stick them on cardboard and just have them there to like now inspire some like not fan fiction. I didn't actually write stories, but like I came up with scenarios as to why they would fight and look at their power levels and try and justify like who would win in this battle. I was just a bored kid. All right, closing the tab of a list of Dreamcast games. We are now moving into the actual episode. What is that game? We are going to talk about games that we consider the greatest of all time.
Indeed. It can be nice and positive.
And this doesn't have to be like a definitive, like oh, this is going to be on a list somewhere, or this was from somebody else's list or anything. This is just games you consider to be one of the greatest of all time. So it definitely could be a 7 or 8 out of 10 style of game, but if you just loved it and it worked for you, like, that's great. I'd love to know that. But what is a game that you consider the greatest of all time, and what about that made it so special for you?
Yeah, unfortunately, the game that I've brought to you today is not a particularly hot take or deep cut or... You know, it is a very well-liked and well-reviewed video game, but I am here today to talk to you.
Hold on, what you should say here is Half-Life 2.
That would be amazing. No, I'm here today to talk about
Sega Rally Championship!
I don't know if that made it into the microphone, but I yelled Sega Rally Championship.
Yeah, it did. It should have. I can crop in the little overplay of the actual
Yeah, just cut it out
too.
From YouTube or something.
Yeah. So what about that game? Why why is that game one that you consider the greatest of all time? Where were you when you first discovered it, and what are those memories that you have of it?
I have no idea where I first discovered it. I've never in my life even seen the arcade cabinet. I've seen a million Daytonas. I've never seen a Sega Rally machine, either of them, in any capacity, somehow. But boy, howdy, have I played a whole lot of that Saturn port, and the, you know, PS2 port and stuff later on. But it is fresh in my mind right now because I just wrapped up watching the 4-hour documentary that is the
I just saw
the Sega Rally review from Pandemonium.
Yeah.
Who is a great dude and started off trying to review every U.S. Saturn game and just kind of very quickly turned into making a bunch of feature length documentaries and then longer on every single one of them. He's been going for a long time, but his magnum opus on Sega Rally just came out, and there's so much amazing archival footage in there, and some great like interviews, new ones, like not just old footage, like you talk to people. And that game has just been on my mind a lot lately. Not too long ago, over on the Insert Credit forums, we had a little like time attack thing going for a while. We had a little like competition to see who could, you know, get the time down the fastest on the desert laps or whatever, or lap times on the desert course. But no, it's just both the arcade version and the Saturn. I don't even call it a port because, or I don't even want to call it a port because it's kind of a completely, like, it's a whole other engine. It was built from the ground up to be a completely different thing. Because Tetsuya Mizuguchi is, a genius, and I love him, but he's also, eager to do a lot of work all the time. So he was like, well, the best way that we could do this is also the hardest way, so we're going to do it. But yeah, so I think I'll narrow it down to the Saturn version because that's the one that I've spent the most time with. But that is a game that is, how do I put it? Where do I start for Sega Rally Championship? That game has a lot of its soul and spirit out front in its presentation. It is very loud and colorful in 90s and Sega, and very rally. It's, you know, loud and messy and chaotic and explosive. But once you actually get into it and start playing it, it might take a little bit to get used to if you've never played it before, because it's a very different feel, I think, than most games that have come since. But I also think that it feels better than, do I want to say most games have come, like, maybe, I don't know, that's a bold claim. I don't know if I'm ready to paint another target on myself, but anyway, point is, Sega Rally Championship is a game that was refined down to the precision of, like, an obsidian blade. It's just so carefully tuned and honed, and, like, just they spent so much time up until the very last possible second tweaking little tiny values everywhere, making just the physics and the kinesthetics and the way that game feels in your hand just as close to what that game's version of perfect is as they could possibly get to, you know. It's car handling in a video game is not something that you could describe as, like, an objective, you know, like, yeah, they did it, it's perfect, like, what does that mean? So I guess I would just say they did it real good. I don't know, I feel like I'm rambling a lot in really weird ways now that the coffee's kicked in. I apologize.
All good. Well, I mean, like, it makes sense.
Yeah,
like,
bail me out, please.
I don't know,
over here.
I don't think it's your greatest game. I mean, you're not your number one, but it's a game
one
you consider
them, yeah,
one of your greatest of all time. So if there's passion and interest and love behind it, that's good. I don't think you're floundering.
Yeah, my brain is outrunning my mouth. This is the problem.
Sega's always had that history with like great, like, racing games. Like, they, like, you know, were, like, leveling up, like, over the years for sure. I mean, like, Virtual Racing and Daytona USA and, like, all these things, like kind of came before it. So, like, I think it definitely, like, crested there before, obviously. Like, they didn't necessarily have, I don't think they had, like, as big of a one, like for like their like the Dreamcast per se. I think they made like a lot of swings for it, but like not ones that I think maybe had like a big impact in that same way. But still, like historically, like with many of their series, like they have, like you even mentioned it previously, with like Outrun and everything.
Outrun, Hang On.
Yeah, like there's, they have.
Yeah, they have a long history of. Yeah.
Yeah, so like it's really cool. I actually do need to come pull up my YouTube and check that out. I think I saw Time Extension, I think on social media I saw them like, you know, share that out as well. The video for that and all that stuff, and I was like, saw that runtime and I was like, okay, this is cool. Like I'm gonna enjoy the hell out of this. I'm not even a huge fan personally of them, but I just love like a really like well researched, like involved like retrospective on something by like clearly a fan of what it is. Give it to me in 8 4-hour episodes and like I'll like watch every single one of them just because like I want to learn more about it. I think it's a cool pick. I definitely think that the joy of doing this podcast and talking to different people is to hear different perspectives and things, and I think in my like little circle of people that I've had on so far, I don't know that anyone will have said Sega Rally Championship at all, but that's why I think it's cool to have on different guests and visions and everything. What's your favorite? Do you go back and play the Saturn version of it, or were there like future ports that you think that you maybe have spent more time with or anything?
There was a Japan only port on the PS2 later that came with another. Like there were a few other games called Sega Rally over the years. There was like Revo and stuff like that. It was kind
they
of
made
like
it like
the last one.
They made it like a series, but Championship was actually the first game in it to be called Sega Rally.
It's weird, like because Sega Rally 2 is very strange. The frame rate is all over the place on Dreamcast. There's the PS2 port of the 95 game, which is fantastic. And then there's packed in with that was what they called Sega Rally 2006, which is like a whole other racing game with its own like weird campaign and stuff. They had Sega Rally Revo on the 360, PS3, PSP, all that stuff. And then I think they did one more arcade machine in like 2011, I want to say, something like that. That like a really limited release. I don't even know if it left Japan or not. But that's it. Like there's no way to go play Sega Rally Championship right now on modern hardware without emulating it. Like that's just not an option, which is a curse that befalls a lot of racing games because of licensing. And this was, to my knowledge, the first game to have actually gone out and legally licensed actual real life vehicles, as opposed to just slapping the Ferrari logo on the back of the car in Outrun and dealing with the legal consequences later, like they did. But no, for this one, like they really specifically wanted the Lancia Delta and the Toyota Celica GT4. So they went out to Lancia and Toyota and gave them this whole presentation and like had to talk them into them allowing this sort of thing to happen because it was just not something that had really been done before. Real life cars definitely show up in earlier games, but I don't believe they were actually like legally licensed and stuff. I was thinking about arcade games the other day, as one does, and I was thinking about high scores, right? And I was thinking about games that give you points as a reward, in shooters and stuff. And I have conflicting feelings about that, just philosophically, because for me, I think of points and scores and stuff in arcade style games more as a unit of measurement, I guess, as opposed to a reward system. Because what do they do for me as a reward, right? Like, it's like if you're getting big old point drops from enemies and stuff in a game that are relatively randomized or whatever, it's not always necessarily a great indicator of your like performance objectively or whatever. Which makes it a little messier if you are trying to do things like high score runs with your friends or other people's initials in the arcade or whatever. But lap times in racing games are, for the most part, relatively objective units of measurement that we can use kind of like a score in that sense. and just trying to get your times down as far as possible, etc. And Sega Rally is a really fun game to do that in because it just feels really, really good in the hands. Like, it's just so carefully, lovingly tuned by people that just had a virtuosic level of competence in their craft. I don't know. It's a lot of people that were extremely good at a very specific type of thing. And they made something that I consider a masterpiece. There are very few video games that I like to use the big capital M word on. But Sega Rally is one of them.
Boom. You heard it here first, folks. Wait, you heard it here? I thought I messed up.
Yeah, you got it.
That's cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. I've got maybe, I don't know if you can say this is the exact polar opposite of like genre and style of game. Like, I mean, you tell me, does Jammer Lammy sit alongside Sega Rally Championship, or is it far away across like genres to be a completely different experience entirely?
I have no idea, man.
I personally consider Jammer Lammy one of the greatest games of all time. I have a love of Parappa the Rapper, like that first game, like definitely, like, you know, really is the one that like kind of like set its mark. Like, it was one of those just oddball games that Sony invested in. It was a rhythm music game. Like, it, like, just for me as a young kid playing the demo. Sorry. When I first got my PlayStation, having like that little packed in like demo disc and everything, and playing Parappa for the first time, I could just think about all like the side-scrolling shooters and the side-scrolling beat-em-ups and the top-down space shooters and the sports games. Like, every video game I'd ever played before, Zelda or like any adventure game like that, like Parappa the Rapper was like, how is this a video game? Like, this is not anything like any of those games. Like, but I'm like completely like enthralled, entertained by this, like having to like be on timing and in rhythm, and like having like these mechanics of just like rewarding you for being on time and kind of like figuring out it's like cool, like you rapping cool system and everything. So fell in love with that. That became just an instant thing that just like reinforced the idea that video games can and absolutely will be anything, and can and absolutely entertain you in different ways, to like not judge them by their covers and all that stuff. So I've gone on to now fall in love with games like Harvest Moon and, like I said, Parappa the Rapper, on top of games like Gears of War and things like that. Like, I can love them all just because I just want to be entertained, and I love the ways that games can kind of like give that to you. But to me, Jammer Lammy took everything Parappa did, but gave you like a lot more. So I think for value reasons, I have to like say like this is like the one that I would like put on my list, if I had to like kind of omit the others in the series, because you can play through the entire game, rhythm action through it all. Some would say that like being able to like your buttons and the timing and the rhythm of the levels, like you're playing Lammy's guitar instead of rapping Parappa's lyrics, so it doesn't sound as disjointed if you are trying to like quote unquote like freestyle away from what's prescribed.
The bolt.
So if you are on like a completely locked in rhythm and you do it flawlessly, it still sounds a little disjointed with Parappa, but not with like Lammy's guitar. But that being said, you can beat the entire game and unlock a mode where you play through Parappa in a remixed version of all the levels, rapping through it all. So like, hold on, is this Parappa 3? Like, what am I doing here? Why am I getting two games in one? And then there was like the two player modes and like Lammy's like rival, like that negative color, like that black and white version of her. What was her name? I forgot her name.
Oh man, I don't remember now.
I want to say it was something like Rammy, but it was something bizarre.
The
like
exact
that.
Same Kana.
Yeah. God, what was that? Whatever. But it was really cool. Like the value that it had in there. And then they had like these really cool, like long form, like, as the loading screens came up after you finished a level, when you would replay that level, you'd see loading screens with all the PlayStation iconography. And it was actually like, hey, if you get into that you rapping cool or like that cool meter, you start to freestyle. If you play out those entire like chains of button combinations there, it goes into some like extra crazy be-all end-all thing, which I've never personally pulled off, but there was just so much the developers packed into a game that was simply just a timing-based rhythm music game, very light essentially on gameplay, but there was just so much like value and attention put into all of it, and I don't know, it's just, it's a very unique game. And so it's one that I definitely, like, I know that other people aren't going to necessarily consider the game or the series, like, that high up in the, you know, pantheon of video games and everything. But for me, like, what it did to, like, open my mind as, like, a young player to, like, know that, like, you know, the appropriate thing of not judging a book by its cover, like I said, like, just having your mind open. Like, you have no idea, like, what mechanics or what the gameplay might do to, like, entertain you or hook you or entice you to kind of keep going. And this is one, the series that, like, I've always loved, like, the idea that there could be a follow-up. Like, we got a remaster on PS4 that had odd, like, latency issues, and so it couldn't quite, like, love it the same way. And
yeah, I had to mute it to beat that version of it.
Yeah. Yeah, which is weird. Because
it's emulating the PSP port, but it's... Yeah. Yeah, anyway.
How do you mute Parappa in order to successfully play it? Like, it's not a silent game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's a game that you have to play either on a PSP or on a CRT because the timing windows are so very, very tight. So I think if they actually wanted to take that seriously and put it out again, they would need to probably widen those out a little bit for latency of most modern displays.
Yeah. And then when they did that PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale
game,
Parappa was in that. And I'm like, all right. I mean, Sony is clearly remembering Parappa. Like, he's here. Astrobot's Playroom was like, there's Parappa references in that. And I'm like, all right, y'all, you know, it's here.
That game feels like a graveyard now. It makes me so sad.
Oh, I know. But I mean, maybe one day, you know, all I can hope is maybe one day. The cool thing too is one thing I wanted to try and like find a way to like play and emulate. There was an arcade version of Jammer Lammy that like I don't know
really?
If it, like yeah I don't know if it was it was like lost to time, but there was some like retro gaming newsletter that like I was following, and I want to say it was a Retronauts episode like talked about it briefly as well.
Interesting.
Potentially, but in like 2023, some like arcade cabinet was found, and they were able to like archive the data, and so now it's available to download. But you got to like find like a unique arcade emulator, and me being like an Apple user isn't the easiest thing in the world because it's, you know, first being like reconfigured for PC at first, but I'm just hoping one day I'll be able to like wrap it in some kind of application that will allow me to play this arcade version that apparently is a special unique version of it all, but I don't know for sure.
Nice.
But yeah, that's Jammer Lammy, and that's one of my greatest games of all time.
Yeah, I don't know that I necessarily hold it up at the top of the top, but I love that game, dude. Rodney Greenblatt's art does not do a whole lot for me outside of those games, but it works so well in those games. I like that whole just like very loose flowing lines and paper crafty aesthetic is wonderful. And every game that Masaya Matsuda worked on, I think, is at least all of the ones that I know of, which is basically these and then Vibribbon, Vibripple are all incredible. Yes.
Yep.
Thumb up. Agree.
Thumb up. That's the scale. That
not
a
use. Half-Life 2 situation.
Yeah. Well, right on. Well, thanks for joining another episode. And
Thank you, man.
Definitely, let's set up some time to make sure you can be on future episodes as well. But it was great talking with you.
I would be honored, and as always, I apologize in advance.
I'll put it in like the notes below. But your social media handles are like things you want to plug. Like, is there anything that you want people to know or follow you on, or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. My portfolio is at elmore.design. If you want to take a look through there and maybe we can make a video game together. I don't know. Otherwise, elmore.zone on Blue Sky. I think I'm just Andrew Elmore and co-host. That's about it. I haven't looked at Twitter in about a year. I guess that's it. I'm on a racing game podcast called Time Extend that I keep forgetting to plug on Flashback 64, which I'm not actually a part of, but they keep pulling me back in for one more job. Anyway, that's about all I got, I suppose. Mythic Resonance on YouTube is where I've been doing some weird in-depth stuff there. I've got plans, but anyway.
Okay, I'll put that in the the show notes and lots of descriptions. People can give you a shout out and a follow and check out those things. But right on. Thanks for joining the party.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Guest on the show, so like, you know, introduce yourself, tell me like maybe what's that earliest system you remember playing, or some classic sure. gaming, like, you know, what defines you from a gaming standpoint, and who are you? So maybe answer that first, and then I've got an icebreaker question that I'm going to surprise you with too.
Solid. What up, everybody? My name's Sean. I'm a longtime gamer, like since 4 years of age. First gaming system I played was Sega Genesis. My grandfather, God rest his soul, wanted me to be cutting edge, so he bought me a Sega, and my little sister, who was 3 at the time, didn't want to feel left out, bought her a Super Nintendo. And I was jealous because she doesn't play games, so it's like I saw the Super Nintendo just sit there gathering dust. This is ridiculous, but Sega Genesis, Sonic was my guy. I'm more of a fighting game. Playing fighting games, a good fighting game, like Super or Street Fighter. Tekken's great. The new Tekken 8, awesome. I like a good RPG, so those are pretty much my go-to.
All right, well, okay. You started SNES and Genesis. You got that. We got some of your go-tos. Fighting game aficionado, that's cool. Well, let me hit you with an icebreaker then to maybe see how we can define you as a person. What collectible would you personally need to find if your life was a video game?
Shoes,
okay.
But it'd be like 16-bit shoes, and they would be like different types of like power for there are different types of power ups. Have you ever played like the Windy City, Jordan the Windy City?
Oh yeah.
So it's like you had different basketballs that different power ups. So like different shoes would be different power ups. So like you collect them essentially, and they kind of like a Mega Man type thing. So there would be different types of shoes.
Okay. That's a good answer. That's a cool answer. All right. Well, then we want to just ask you the question of the moment then. For you personally, what is a game that you consider one of the greatest of all time?
It's a great game. An honorable mention, I will say, The Last of Us. That game, by far, I could play forever. Like, I could beat that game once a month, I would. I've beat it like over 12 times, but sadly, it's not my favorite game. My go game is Final Fantasy VII, the PlayStation's very own. It had so much at the time, and as a gamer, especially coming from Sega, we're talking like 2D. I was playing 2D platformers and side scrollers. Like, this is not a knock to my boy Sonic. Like, my boy Sonic has held me down in the darkest of times, but Final Fantasy VII just had so much as far as universe building as well, that it just left a long lasting impression on me when I was like, I think at the time I was in second grade.
Second grade.
I know. Dial it back a bit. I'll never forget playing it, my first experience for it. The first time I experienced Final Fantasy VII, I didn't even play it. I get to play the game. I was at my homeboy Patrick's house, sleepover. He was the spoiled kid that got like all the good stuff before anybody. His mom and dad were both doctors. Like, what the heck? The man's got it all. So needless to say, he had PlayStation, he had everything. And this was back when PlayStation was doing like demo discs. So I think Final Fantasy VII was the demo disc for, shoot, I know people are going to come for me if I get this wrong, but I want to say it was for... Dang it, what was it? I can't remember. I think it was not Crash Bandicoot. It was some other game.
Yeah, they had like a Square sampler CD that had a demo for Seven on it, and it may have been one of like Sony's like Jam Pack, like whatever, those pack-in demo type things too. It could have been, but regardless.
Regardless, it was one of those, so you only got to play up to a certain point, specific mission. And I just saw him play it, and I just looked at the graph. First of all, the first was the graphics at the time, which, I mean, by now standard, it's like, what the heck, you guys are blown away by polygons and pixels, cool. But at the time in 97, that was like cutting edge. So it's an impression. The gameplay obviously was remarkable to this day. Like, you'll see game franchises try to emulate something similar to like what Final Fantasy was able to like deliver. And it's great. Like, the character development was great. The story was great. It was the first game that got me like emotionally invested in a game, and I was it's to this day a Final Fantasy franchise I'll still play, unless it's like the back half of 15, and then you kind of want to be upset about it, but you know, it's what it is.
That's fun. Being in second grade, like Final Fantasy 7, I've already shared it myself on the podcast that is my favorite game of all time as well. Being in second grade, do you think that it was like was there like reading comprehension stuff? Like, did you play it and enjoy what you could and then replay it again later when you're a little older to like absorb more from it?
Yeah, oh, for sure. When I was in second grade, like, I honestly was just trying to not like be beat by like the computer. So like the biggest thing was like, I'm just trying to like body all the enemies that I see. And I played different. Like, I would just go and try to just complete the story, and as I get older, I kind of want to, you know, do what I have to do so I can do what I want to do in the game. So I may have to stay in an area a little bit longer than I normally would have when I was in second grade. And you know, beating bosses was a lot harder when I was in second grade, because I wasn't farming as much as I should. Because in an RPG, I didn't know you had to farm. It was the very first RPG I ever played. So needless to say, my first playthrough, I got bodied quite a bit. I think it was the dragon that you fought in Nibelheim. That dragon effed me up. I think I spent almost a solid 2-3 weeks at that dragon, because I could only play video games on the weekends. So I was like, why can't I beat it? And I was like, that boss. And then when I finally found out about Vincent, I unlocked Vincent, and then there was the boss that you fight. You unlock this, and I couldn't beat that boss because I was weak sauce, and I like it gave me like not nightmares. I was there.
Yeah,
inadequacy.
No, that one was tough. I remember that one when we were younger, my brother and I playing through that. And like, the gimmick there was, you know, it was like a half magic, half physical like thing. But like, the gimmick is, if you hit him with too much like physical, I think it would flip to like just the magic only side and essentially be like double strength with magic. And if you weren't prepared for that, you could easily get wiped. But I love the look of that, like half purple and then half like tentacly, like orangey look, weird creature. Yeah, that was rad. They had like a version of him in Rebirth that you get to fight. So you need to get around to playing that yourself. Rad. That's cool. This is a question. Like, obviously, like, that's your favorite game. Having you on in like a future episode, I'm sure we'll ask again, what are some other favorite games? I know that I've answered this already. Like I said myself, Final Fantasy VII is one of my favorites. But I do want to maybe share out one of my own. Let's see, what one should I pull from? You know what? The Hotline Miami games. If you've never played the Hotline Miami like games, again, they originally kind of rolled out around like the PS3 era. They were like digital downloads, like indie games from Devolver Digital. But they're like top-down, like, pixel art style. Like, the visuals are really, I don't know if you maybe if you played the original like Grand Theft Auto 1 or 2, the way it kind of like appears like that top down style. You have weapons. They're really like short and sweet levels where you're kind of breaking into a into a home or into an environment where there's a lot of like thugs and goons, and you'll die with like a one hit kill, but. You almost string together these combos of like killing people, quickly shooting them, quickly like throwing a knife across the room, busting open a door to knock them down and like pummel them with a baseball bat, like pick up a shotgun and like shoot somebody in a bathroom really quick. But if you string them together, there's like a multiplier and combo meter. So it fuses like really like quick and brutal violence and like a Tony Hawk's Pro Skater style like comboing system. And it's just over the top. Yeah, it's over the top, and like the visual aesthetics of it, like the pixel art and the style of it has all this like 80s like neon vibe and this like really cool like design like flair to it. It just mixes so much, and the soundtrack. Yeah, and like the soundtrack stuff too, like this ties it all together like super well. Like it is bizarre. It is cool. It's got like a really dark and disturbing story. That's like, I mean, it's like. If David Lynch like made a video game on acid, you know, it's got like a really a kind of out there but still like followable
with a coke problem.
Yeah, no, it's rad. Like if you haven't checked it out, like watch some videos of it. But both Hotline Miami 1 and 2. 2 like is a sequel that like really improved it. Like all of the gameplay elements. It added in a couple like different playable characters that added some gameplay variety, and then it kind of ratcheted the story up to like even extra like levels. But it's rad. Like it's just highly recommended. It's always on sale. Devolver Digital, like I mean Sony and like the PlayStation stuff, like that's always been my favorite. Like it's just Sony as a video game publisher is like my favorite publisher because of like the wild genre swings and like wild like random choices they make of like publishing various games, like well, Parappa the Rapper to Legend of Dragoon to Shadow of the Colossus, like all these random things. Devolver Digital is like that as well. So like Hotline Miami is just one of these amazing games they've done, like Titan Souls or like Ollie, the original like one. Like there's a lot of great games they do, but Hotline Miami for sure is like my favorite of theirs, or it's up there at least for sure. But definitely top tier like game that I think is like. I think now that enough time's passed since the release, like it definitely needs like a reminder that it's still an amazing game to play. They have it ported over, like you can still download it on PlayStation 4 and 5. There's a Switch port of it, so it's still accessible. And like I said, it's often on sale. So if you haven't given it a shot, watch some videos for it and get addicted. It's like super good.
Dude, I'm ready to do the Symphony of Violence.
Yeah, it's brutal. Like when you string together a combo, I have like some old like PS4 had those like the share play stuff where you can like record like you know your gameplay and everything.
Yeah,
I have like you know deep in my like YouTube archives, like I have like gameplay videos of me like you know playing it, get like an S rank on like levels and just running through a string of it. Like it's brutal. It's really cool. But
check that out.
Yeah. Well, right on, Sean. Thanks for. Popping on. These episodes are designed to be short and sweet like this. So we answer a question, we rough it out, and then that's it.
I like it.
All right. Thank you so much, Sean. Have a good one.
No worries, dude. I'm always here for you. No doubt. You too. Peace.